Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, reinventing the MTA.
Having some ventilation on the subway platforms.
The noise on the tracks, the screeching sound.
Let's talk about bike accessibility.
There's no good way to get cross town until you reach 42nd Street.
Callers to our show last week. Today, former U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood joins us in his current role as co-chair of Governor Cuomo's MTA Reinvention Commission. He'll react to some of your ideas and share his own. Also today, Dr. James Levine, inventor of the treadmill desk, on adding movement to your life's, even your work's, daily activities. And with three videos of questionable police behavior in the New York City News, we will talk to a woman named Deborah Goodman who got arrested last year for videotaping the police, and to her attorney, Norman Siegel, about where a citizen's right to tape begins and ends. But first, is the tragic war between Israel and Hamas the result of a mistake? Shira Frankel from BuzzFeed, former NPR Middle East correspondent, joins us with her reporting today that Hamas may not have been responsible for the kidnapping and murder of three Israeli teens that began the current cycle of violence. Hello from New York. Shira, where are you today? I'm told Shira Frankel is in Jerusalem today, but I can't hear her. Shira, are you there? All right, and we will open up the phones while we try to connect the line to Jerusalem. You know, people forget things quickly. So the current violence, as our phone number is 212-433-WNYC, the current violence may have become about Hamas tunnels and rockets and missiles versus Israeli bombs and closing off Gaza to the outside world. But it began last month with the kidnapping and murders of three Israeli teens. And we have a clip that we'll play in a minute of Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. But I'll tell you what, while we're trying to make this connection to Shira Frankel's phone, which I guess is giving us a little trouble, what I'll do is put out the moral question at the heart of the debate over the Israeli operation. At least for many people, this is the moral question. How many killings of innocent civilians are morally acceptable to prevent the murder of your own innocent civilians, though fewer of them, which would continue without the operation? You get the question, right? How many killings of innocent Palestinian civilians are morally acceptable to prevent the murder of Israeli civilians, though fewer of them, which would continue without the operation? How would you answer that question? 212-433-WNYC. What if you took it out of the context of 100 years of Middle East politics, Arab-Israeli politics, Israeli-Palestinian politics, and war and conflict and displacement and all the horrors? If it was just somebody was attacking your community, and in order to stop it, you had to go to another community and root out the tunnels, root out the rockets, root out the missiles, and in doing so, you are inevitably going to kill some innocent people. What's the moral equation when it comes to your legitimate right to defend yourself at some level? At what point does it become morally unacceptable? I think we have Shira on the line now. Shira, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Thanks for joining us. So I was just reminding people that everyone forgets things so quickly. So the current violence may have become about the Hamas tunnels and rockets and missiles on the one side, the Israeli bombs and closing off Gaza to the outside world on the other. But it began last month with the kidnapping and murders of those three Israeli teenagers. Remind us of that incident and why it led to war between Israel and Hamas.
Right. So the killing and the murder and kidnapping of those three teenagers was the most immediate trigger that led to the events that we're seeing right now. There's going to be plenty of people out there who would go back 5 years, 10 years, even 50 years and say that it began then. But if we're going to look at the current cycle of violence, it does seem clear that their kidnapping and subsequent deaths was what kicked this all off. The order of events was that those teenagers were kidnapped in the weeks afterwards, there was a lot of outcry in the Israeli public, Israeli politicians taking the stage and saying that these teenagers should be revenged. And when their bodies were found 2 weeks later, unfortunately, somebody did take it into their own hands and revenge their deaths by killing a Palestinian teen. Now, that began another cycle of violence. Hamas members in the West Bank began to be arrested, and Hamas in the Gaza Strip retaliated and said they wanted their members freed and began shooting rockets into southern and central Israeli communities. Now, that led to another escalation, and now we find ourselves in the midst of a war with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu saying that there's no end in sight.
And your reporting suggests that Hamas, or at least Hamas leadership, didn't do it or didn't order it, the original kidnapping and murder of the three Israeli teens?
Yeah, 1 month ago, when we first began reporting on this story, we spoke to an Israeli intelligence officer in the West Bank, and he was very clear with us. He said that all of the intelligence indicated that Hamas was not behind this attack, that Hamas leadership, whether exiled abroad or in the Gaza Strip, had not ordered it. He then actually went back and spoke to him again just a couple days ago, and he said, furthermore, Hamas in the West Bank, which is a very fragmented organization, also appear to have not directly ordered this attack. He said that if they had, then there would have been intelligence for Israel to follow. If there had been some senior Hamas figure pointing the finger and saying, kidnap an Israeli, then they would have picked up on that, on those murmurs in intelligence, but they didn't. And so he's saying all the indications, at least for him, as an Israeli intelligence officer working for the army in the West Bank, are that this was a lone cell which acted by themselves on their own initiative.
Did the killers from this lone cell, if it was a lone cell, come through the tunnels from Gaza into Israel?
No, the two men who have been named by Israel as being behind the kidnapping and killing of the teenagers are from Hebron. They come from a family which is pretty well known there. It's a bit of a fringe family. They've been involved in criminal elements for some time, and they're still at large. Members of that family have been arrested while the Israeli police look for the killers. But at this point, no one knows where they are or what their motivations were.
So let me play a clip of Prime Minister Netanyahu in June saying on television that Hamas was responsible, and this is before it really escalated into the current big-time operation that Israel has undertaken in Gaza. But this is Netanyahu in June, and tell me how inconsistent this is with your understanding now of what really happened with respect to those teenagers.
Well, we've pretty much figured out who are the kidnappers, the actual perpetrators, the supporters, the command structure, and there's no question these are members of Hamas. We've passed some of that information to the U.S. government and others. Will make it public as soon as the investigation enables us to do that. My number one goal right now is to bring back our three kidnapped boys. One of them, by the way, one of these teenagers is an American citizen. Mm-hmm. But we'll divulge this information very soon, and I think the entire world will see veracity.
Prime Minister of Israel Benjamin Netanyahu, and that was actually on Morning Edition with Steve Inskeep back in June. So he says in that clip, Shira Frankel, we pretty much figured out who are the kidnappers, the actual perpetrators, the supporters, and the command structure. Maybe that's where it starts to be contradicted by your reporting. He says there's no question these are members of Hamas. And I think that's consistent with what you reported. This is a lone cell, but of people who identify with Hamas. But then when he talks about the supporters and the command structure, what's going on there as far as you could tell?
Well, what we've heard from Israeli analysts was that Benjamin Netanyahu wanted for some time to be able to dismantle the Hamas infrastructure and Hamas membership in the West Bank, and that this was an opportunity to do so. What quite a few of them have pointed out to us in the course of the last month is that the war currently being fought in Gaza was inevitable, that the tunnels between the Gaza Strip and Israel's southern communities would have been used at some point to attack Israeli civilians, potentially kill them. And Netanyahu and his top brass in the army basically saw this as an opportunity. They see the intelligence did not back the statements made by Netanyahu and other members of his cabinet that Hamas had ordered this kidnapping, that they had done this on purpose from Gaza or from their exiled leadership. And that Netanyahu and other members of his cabinet who came forward and made statements like the one you just aired overstepped what they knew to be true.
And so here's a little bit more of Netanyahu in that same interview. This is June 23rd, so this is over a month ago, before the ground operation, or you know, the real escalation of the mission against the infrastructure in Gaza. The boys are still said to be missing at that point, rather than confirmed dead. But listen to how far Netanyahu goes about the goals of his response to the kidnappings.
Our first goal is to get our boys back. The second is to find the kidnappers, who are Hamas. The third is to weaken as much as possible Hamas that that performs these grisly deeds and calls for our destruction. That's natural. Anybody would do that.
So, again, just put that in the context of what your reporting shows is known now and what would have been known by Netanyahu at that time.
So I couldn't hear the clip all that clearly. There's no doubt that Hamas tries to kidnap Israeli civilians, Israeli soldiers, uses as leverage to achieve its goals, namely that of opening the blockade on the Gaza Strip and freeing its prisoners who are in Israeli jails. And I think that Netanyahu and other Israeli leaders have said again and again that Hamas is an organization that wants to attack Israel, that wants to carry out terrorist attacks against Israel. However, once again, what we're seeing in this specific case is that the people who acted probably did so alone. Israel's own intelligence shows that. And that Israel used what was happening in order to dismantle Hamas's infrastructure, in order to go after Hamas, and in the words of Israel's foreign minister, Avigdor Lieberman, to bring Hamas to its knees.
And yet the rest of the sequence of events that you laid out happened. So if there was this kidnapping and murder of the three Israeli teens by this lone Hamas cell, and then there was the retribution killing of a Palestinian, and then the rockets actually did start coming from Hamas in Gaza, then there is Israel with that on its hands. So at what point does the truth that you seem to be digging out here matter to the larger picture on the ground right now?
I think it's unfortunately gotten so far away from that at this point, that events have escalated so far beyond that, that few people here on the ground in Israel or in the Palestinian territories are going to care what started this all. At the moment, they're locked in war. Both Hamas's leadership in the Gaza Strip and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu here in Jerusalem have said that this is going to be a long haul for both of them. They said that they're engaged. There's over 1,000 Palestinians killed in Gaza, over 50 Israeli soldiers killed. And no one seems to be looking to end this. And so at the moment, people are so caught up in this round of fighting, this cycle of fighting, that few are kind of looking back and saying, wait a minute, what kicks this off? How did we get started on this path that we now find ourselves on?
Shira Frankel, former NPR correspondent, now the Mideast correspondent for BuzzFeed in Jerusalem, on her reporting that it was not Hamas, or at least directed by Hamas leadership, as originally reported and as originally alleged as a certainty by Prime Minister Netanyahu and others last month, that started this current cycle of violence, but rather the kidnapping and murders of the Israeli teens by a lone cell. 212-433-WNYC. And Jim in Brick, you're on WNYC with Shira Frankel. Hello.
Hi. I was having some difficulty with the line, hearing all the previous comments. But, well, two things. One, I had told the screener, but the other was, I believe there was a murder of teens before the two incidences that seemed to be tit for tat, and the one being burned for the three being kidnapped. But the other thing is, it's been not only is the disingenuousness of the administration, that they knew Hamas wasn't responsible, that Netanyahu needed a pretext as the Hamas and Palestinian Authority were getting together.
Jim, thank you. So that's some speculation that it was purposeful misdirection on the part of the Netanyahu administration to focus attention on the Hamas leadership because they wanted to go in there and harm Hamas because of the unity government that had just been formed between Hamas and Fatah in the West Bank. Does evidence back up the caller's theory?
You know, there's been analysts here on the ground that have suggested the same. But coming out of all this, what we're seeing is that Palestinian Authority Chairman Mahmoud Abbas has been weakened. His own people are protesting and rising against him. There have been massive protests in the West Bank, the largest I've seen here in over a decade. And so, and at the same time, Israel is saying that they want to strengthen him. They want to bolster him. If they do remove Hamas, then they need a strong Palestinian Authority chairman. So if their actions were to try and break up the unity government, bolster Abbas, bring down Hamas, it doesn't seem to be working that way. The Palestinian people don't seem to be going along with it.
Gary in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gary. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning, Brian. And good morning to your guest. These discussions that have gone on in the last couple of weeks as the conflict has escalated to outright violence is missing something fundamental. And I think the rest of the world knows it. But America, American media, European media seems to be like the woman who looks at the soldiers marching in the parade and says, you know, why are these guys marching out of step? Because the entire world sees and knows the truth. Look, you just asked a question about how does Netanyahu feel about Hamas and whether your source in Jerusalem can corroborate what the last caller said. Well, Netanyahu has made no bones about this. He does not want to deal with Hamas. He wants to destroy Hamas. But to my larger point, Brian, this is, as the rest of the world knows, and American media, NPR included, does not seem to want to admit, you included, this is a military occupation by Israel that has gone on for 50-odd years. Israel controls the air, the land, the ground. If Hamas has these tunnels that are so effective, you know, all this concrete, we're seeing pictures of all these tunnels, pray tell, why hasn't Hamas used these tunnels and gone on and blown away Israeli citizens? The narrative is convoluted to the extreme. If someone is occupying me, Brian, I have a right to resist. How can the narrative now talk about Israel defending itself?
Well, Israel would say that they pulled out of Gaza several years ago. They ended that occupation and thought then that Gaza, free of Israeli occupation, would not be the locus of attacks on Israeli civilians, but it continued to be so. Hence, from the Israeli standpoint, the limitations on movement out of Gaza and such.
Then, Brian, you need some other sources. And I would suggest Phyllis Bennis. Brian, Israel controls the air, the land, the sea, in and out of. Israel never pulled out of Gaza. There is a wall around Gaza. There is a physical wall around Gaza. Israel didn't control. Israel, listen, I mean, I don't know how American media continues to do this. What are we afraid of? Why doesn't American media simply go to the historical record? Listen, if you can come into my home at will, whether it's the West Bank, whether it's the Gaza, at will, nothing stops Israeli soldiers from coming into any part of the occupied territory and blowing someone's home up.
And Israel says, stop trying to blow us up and deny our right to exist, and we'll leave you alone. I'm just saying there are two sides to this story. And, Gary, thank you very much. I appreciate your call and keep calling. So Shira Frankel.
I would just like to add, sorry, Brian, one thing to what you said that Gary should also note is that the blockade of the Gaza Strip isn't just Israel. Egypt seals the Gaza Strip as well. Egypt has a crossing with Gaza, the Rafah crossing, and it's been Egypt's decision for some time to seal that border and to dismantle the tunnels, the hundreds of tunnels that used to run along the border between Gaza and Egypt. So when you're looking at this, you can't just say that Israel's closing off the Gaza Strip, Israel's blocking the Gaza Strip. Egypt also has a hand in this.
When the blockade of Gaza, if that's the right word, or, you know, the fence, there was a good report. I'm trying to remember what network I saw it on. I think it was a setup on Meet the Press maybe on Sunday, and it showed visually very clearly, for people who don't already know this, just how fenced in Gaza is. It's a little strip along the sea. There's only part of it that they can use for shipping. The entrances to Israel are controlled by Israel. The entrances to Egypt are controlled by Egypt, as you say, and very limited how much people can go in and out. And that's the essence of Hamas's demand in this conflict, right? That's why Hamas doesn't stand down and stop firing the rockets, which Israel said would lead it to stop its military operation if the rockets were, you know, really permanently going to stop. It's because they want those crossings to be more open for Gazans and for stuff to get in and out. Is there the basis of a deal there? I mean, if they weren't so incredibly polarized, would there be the basis of a deal? We'll stop shooting on all sides and we'll let everything through. But is there the basis of a deal?
Right. I mean, Hamas needs to bring something back to its people right now. It's in a corner, and they need to come out of this and be able to say to the people, the 1.7 million Palestinians that are living in Gaza, hey, we've achieved something. You haven't lost your children, your wives, your family members in vain. And the main thing they want is to lift that blockade. They want to be able to do trade. They want their people to be able to freely travel. I don't think anyone realizes it's a physical blockade, but it's so hard for anybody from Gaza just to leave the Gaza Strip, to travel anywhere else in the world. And they want to be able to come back and tell their people, we've made your lives better. We've managed in some small way to lift this blockade. Now, they're hoping, the Hamas leadership is hoping that it's going to be through Egypt. That's their preference. They want Rafah open. They have a lot of natural ties with Egypt. The city of Rafah, where the crossing is, it's actually split in half between Egypt and the Gaza Strip. Quite a few people in Gaza have family members that are just a mile away from them on the other side that they can't see. So they see a very natural sort of opportunity for Egypt to step up and say, yeah, we'll open this door for you. You can come through our country, do trade here, and we'll slowly allow you to have an export-import business, and you'll be able to sort of exist somewhat like any other state does. But unfortunately, Egypt isn't saying any of those things. Egypt doesn't appear to be at all interested in opening up the Rafah crossing. Egypt claims that terrorists from Gaza will enter Egypt if they do so. And they've said time and time again that this thing that Hamas wants, which would very much be the basis of a deal, is not something they're willing to give.
Shira Frankel, BuzzFeed correspondent in Jerusalem, as we talk about the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. And Lanny in Nutley, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I was calling just to respond mostly to your question about how many killings is acceptable. And I think that, you know, in this case, this is a case of a war against a terrorist group. And it's not even a war against, like, a country. And, you know, it's amazing to me the response that I've been seeing, not, you know, and hearing just, you know, across the world, where everyone is just up in arms about the, you know, the killing of innocent civilians, which of course is horrible and very sad. But I think in this case, there's really not much that Israel can do that it isn't doing to really lessen that. And I think that, you know, if you look at the
and we may, Lanny, forgive me, we may soon get to the point of asking the question, how many beeps on your phone line are acceptable before we have to cut you off. But do you have any sympathy for the last caller's framing of this in the context of the miserable life of people in Gaza under total Israeli control, even if it's not formal occupation? They control the air, they control the sea, they control the goods that go in and out, the people that go in and out. And you know, if it's 10 civilian Palestinians to protect one Israeli life, if it's 100, if it's 1,000, is there no number at which you say, I can't do this anymore?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I don't know that there's a number that I would say is the limit, but I certainly have sympathy. And I think I think, is it Shira or whoever,
yes,
whoever you have on, you know, she was talking about, you know, the the option that Egypt has to open its borders. You know, I think that a lot of what's happening there is happening because the Palestinian people really have nothing to live for at this point. And I don't know that Israel is really going to, you know, they're so polarized. I don't think that Israel is going to say, okay, we're going to give you something to live for. We're going to, you know, help your economy, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, there's certainly other countries in the area, especially Egypt, who could really step in here and say, you know what, a lot of this is happening because these people have, they have absolutely nothing to live for. So, of course, they're willing to fight tooth and nail. Of course, they're willing to, you know, use human shields and, you know, and sacrifice themselves because at the end of the day, they have nothing. And it's very, very sad and it's horrible. But, you know, I don't think that Israel is really going to be the country that says, okay, here, we're going to help you, because Hamas, you know, wants nothing more than to eradicate Israel.
And so, Lenny, I'm going to leave it there, and I appreciate your call and keep calling us. So let's end here. Shira Franklin, we have former U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood standing by for our next conversation on reinventing the MTA, which he has been charged with doing by Governor Cuomo. But another discouraging element related maybe to both our callers and to what you were saying before about Hamas having to bring back something to their people after all this loss of life politically. From what I've been reading and hearing in news reports, tell me if this is your sense, both Hamas and the right-wing Israeli government are gaining popularity among their people as a result of the current conflict. So rather than exhausted by war and yearning for reconciliation, people on both sides are coming out of this hating the other more than ever, which might suggest another generation of difficulty reaching a peace treaty. But is that your read?
Fine, I'm sorry. The phone line was really bad, and I did miss most of your question, unfortunately.
Are both Hamas and the Netanyahu, Likud party government in Israel gaining popularity as a result of this, leaving people more dug in rather than yearning for reconciliation?
In the short term, definitely. In the short term, popularity for Netanyahu is through the roof, as is on the ground popularity for Hamas, although we can't gauge that as well as we can popularity for Netanyahu. But people should note that this is in the short term. If in the coming months Hamas can't bring a victory home for its people, if because of Egypt's stance on the Gaza Strip, it can't rearm itself, it can't lift the blockade and ease people's lives, we have to remember thousands have lost their homes. They're going to want to rebuild. And if Hamas can't provide that, the popularity is going to go right back down. And in regards to Netanyahu, a wartime prime minister or president is always popular. And so Netanyahu right now is riding the wave of that popularity. But we've already seen the knives come out from right-wing elements of his government, namely Naftali Bennett and Avigdor Lieberman. Both of those people are going to go into the next election saying everything Netanyahu couldn't do for you in Gaza, everything he couldn't do for vis-a-vis the West Bank, vis-a-vis Palestinian militant groups, we can do for you. And we've already seen some of that criticism. Of course, that's been muted because it's a time of war. But we're hearing again and again from people who want to rival Netanyahu that they're going to be even more hardline and right-wing than he is.
And there's the debate. Be even more hardline than the current government with respect to Gaza. And there we leave it, unresolved and ultimately frustrating for today, with Shira Frankel, former NPR correspondent, who you've heard many times from the Mideast, now BuzzFeed's Mideast correspondent in Jerusalem. Shira, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Ray LaHood, and your calls on the reinvention of the MTA next.